And good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Bugging You. I am Bill Beckett, the program director here at Red River Radio. Joining me tonight, Dr. Beverly Burden, who is an associate professor of biology here at LSUS and also our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. Our program is called What's Bugging You, and you can call in with your questions tonight about any insect problem in our area or any of the good insects that you might want to attract to your home or garden at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We'll be taking calls for the next hour about what's bugging you. Beverly, thanks for joining me here tonight.
It's my pleasure, Bill.
And the first thing that came to mind was given the mild winter in our area and some heavy rainfall in March, especially right around mid-March. As we all know, it knocked out the power here at LSUS. A lot of rain came down, and of course, that all has an effect on our insect population. What can we expect? Is it going to be a more prolific insect population this summer? Are they going to be a more abundant? What can we expect?
Well, first of all, I would think one of the major impacts would be the fire ants. Last year's drought really knocked them down very, very hard in the area. And in the spring, it takes a rainfall to get the reproductives up in the air and for that they can start mate and start new colonies. But it's dependent upon the temperature after the rain. And we had some pretty cool days after those rains. So even though the rains might have stimulated the reproductive flight early, the temperatures knocked it down. But if things stay rainy and as it gets warmer, we'll see a resurgence in the fire ants for sure.
Any other populations that we might expect, like mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Are they going to be more prolific?
Mosquitoes overwinter as either adults or eggs. And since it was so dry, then I would expect that a lot of them didn't really survive the mild winter with the drought last year. But it's going to take even a shorter amount of time for those mosquitoes to bounce back up. I would expect within the next 2 weeks we'll see populations that were equivalent to other years at this time.
How about gnats and other critters out there that, are also going to be affected?
Anything with two wings that we put in the fly category are going to indeed be prolific and bounce back. But probably the one insect that sometimes becomes a pest in people's yards that is going to be hurt the worst are going to be the grasshoppers. I expect them to take a hit because with the abundant rain and now with the warming up, they lay their eggs in the ground and they have a lot of problems with fungus getting to their eggs and destroying the eggs. So that's going to impact the grasshopper population in a detrimental way.
Okay. Well, we have our first caller online, Jeff from El Dorado calling in. Jeff, what's your question this evening?
My question is, do y'all know a secret weapon to keep those mosquitoes out of my fishing camp at Felsenthal? It's terrible.
Where's your fish camp at again?
At Felsenthal National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay.
It's right on the Washita River.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's terrible. You can't go out right before dark. It is terrible.
And you're absolutely right. Oftentimes, just at the dusk area, is when a lot of the different species of mosquitoes will feed. So I would say try to not go out during that time, but if you do, it's very hard to exclude mosquitoes from any type of a habitat in which they're abundant the way you described. The best thing for you to do is wear a repellent that contains DEET. I don't recommend the Skin So Soft and some of the other things. What they do is they just cover up the way your body smells so it's not so attractive to mosquitoes. But if you apply a repellent that has DEET in it, then that's an actual repellent. Mosquitoes will actually be forced away from your body. And a lot of people don't understand the percentages of DEET. If you have a 10% solution of DEET versus a 20% solution of DEET, that does not mean that the 20% solution of DEET is twice as strong. It just means that it will last twice as long. And so you have to keep reapplying the DEET in order to repel the mosquitoes.
All right. We have a Barry on the line from Shreveport. Barry, what's your question this evening?
The question I have is, in the local area, speaking of Shreveport, Bossier, and the surrounding area, do we have any other insects or arachnids that has the same ability as the brown recluse of biting you and the same basic symptoms and stuff, such as the necrotic flesh and stuff, if you don't know how to treat it or whatever?
the toxin that the brown recluse has is called a cytotoxin, which means that it actually destroys the cells. There is no other biting insect or spider in the area that has a cytotoxin like that. Now, the black widow has what we call a neurotoxin. It affects the nerve cells, and so a lot of people become jittery, or they'll have muscle spasms and things like that. Now, however, some people might confuse some insect bites, like mosquito bites, or perhaps bites of other ticks or the chiggers, and if they get secondarily infected with a microbial infection, that will also cause a necrotic wound, but it won't be the same as the brown recluse.
All right.
The brown recluse actually causes a bruise because the flesh keeps breaking down, correct?
That is correct. And that's with 90% of the people. With 10% of the people, it can also go a different route, and it'll spread throughout the body, a term that we use, systemic, and that they won't have as bad of a necrotic wound, but it will affect the swelling in other body parts. Sometimes people even claim, and I've been bitten by the brown recluse and it's gone systemic. My head is a little cloudy for a few days, but that's normally only with the first exposure to a brown recluse.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your call, Barry.
All right, thank you. And you can call in right now, 800-552-8502. Again, that is 800-552-8502 to talk to Dr. Beverly Burden, who is our guest tonight on What's Bugging You. She's an entomologist here at LSUS and an associate professor of biology. Now, the brown recluse, they're fairly prevalent throughout Louisiana, correct?
Yes, people in Texas, all in the southeastern part of the United States, and people have brown recluse all around them. Most of the time, the people just don't recognize them. They are not aggressive. And the other thing about a brown recluse bite is that you hardly ever feel the bite. It's just a very mild, like a pinprick, whereas the bite of the black widow hurts immediately during and afterward the bite. So it's two very different modes of the way the body responds.
No, not to scare anybody, but I know brown recluses love moist decaying wood. They like to get up in there into tree logs under that kind of stuff. But when they get into the house, they also tend to like to get up into your closet where you might have folded clothes or sheets and things like that, because the name recluse means that
Sure. They
are reclusive and they like to
That's
hide
right.
away.
That's right. So, you know, this time of the year when people are starting to get into their gardening supplies and start pulling out of things out of the work shed that's been in there all winter, you should wear gloves mm-hmm. and be very mindful that that's a perfect habitat for the brown recluse. And if you see a little brown spider, it may or may not be a brown recluse. Just be avoiding them so they can go their way and you can go yours.
All right, we have our next caller online, Leonard in Shreveport. Leonard, you're on the line with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you?
Well, what's bugging me is these little ants. I've heard them called pharaoh ants or sugar ants, and they're just, what do you do to get rid of them once you have an infestation in your home?
Yeah, pharaoh ants and sugar ants, they're basically the same thing. The problem with them is that they're so small, they can get almost anywhere they want to be, and even the smallest of areas can house a colony of these. It's been reported that they have found these little ants actually in sterilized surgical tubing in hospitals. And so the important thing to do is if you can find their nest and then somehow destroy it, either with hot water or, with the classical insecticide, you know, Bug Be Gone, almost anything that you can use to kill other insects, it's going to kill ants as well. And also, they're in there probably for one of two reasons. They're there for the moisture, And a lot of people had that problem last summer when it was so dry. Insects and ants started coming in the facilities more so than usual, or they're finding some type of food source. So you need to eliminate the water source. You need to eliminate the food source, and that will also help to alleviate the problem.
And you can call in right now at 800-552-8502 to speak with Dr. Beverly Burden, who is our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. The program is called What's Bugging You? Back to the issue of spiders. I had a friend who was bitten not too long ago by a spider, and it started getting fairly infected. Whether or not it was a brown recluse, he doesn't know. But any kind of a spider bite, I would think you'd want to immediately go and get it disinfected and checked out.
Well, I would certainly wash the area with warm, soapy water, maybe put on an antibiotic cream, because a lot of these secondary infections is caused by Staphylococcus aureus, resident flora on a person's skin. And, you know, if you scratch it and irritate it, then that's going to just start the secondary infection over again. And the other thing, let me say something for the spiders. Other than the black widow and the brown recluse, spiders are normally not a problem. In fact, they're considered beneficial organisms to have around, because they will feed on other pests that you don't want to have around. So they're voracious predators. And so in my world, spiders are good.
And even, I lived out in the wilds of Florida for quite a while, had black widows all over the front porch.
Yeah, they're not aggressive.
They never bothered me, but they did keep, you know, a lot of the insect pie. And I mean, I was in the wilds of Florida. This was not the city. This was way out in the countryside. So you can give us a call right now, 800-552-8502, to talk to Dr. Beverly Burden about what's bugging you. And we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back in just a moment and with more of the program from What's Bugging You. And we are back in our studio once again with What's Bugging You. And you can call us right now at 800-552-8502. And give us your question about what's bugging you. We were talking just a minute ago about bed bugs during the break. What's going on with the bed bug population in this area?
It's exploding all across North America and in Europe. Bed bugs used to be very prevalent before World War II. Then with the use of DDT, they weren't prevalent anymore. But we have seen a huge resurgence of bed bugs. And there's different theories as to why that's happened. Some people claim that the use of more organic insecticides around the homes or bringing back the bed bugs. But whatever the reason is, I would really like to warn people not to take used bedding when you go to hotel rooms to check the room. And all you really need to do is strip the bed off on a side and look for little bitty brown spots about the same size, shape, and color of an apple seed. And sometimes just brown discoloration, because after they feed on the blood, they'll defecate it, and it's easy to spot.
Now, they live up inside the mattress, correct?
They can live up inside the mattress. They can live inside the box springs. They can, in hotel rooms, they can live behind the headboard that's always bolted onto the wall. They can live down in the crevice between the boards and the carpet. Up underneath the wallpaper, you have to look at everything. If you see a strip of wallpaper torn, look at that. They might be up in there.
All right. I think we do have another caller on the line. I'm not sure who it is, but if you're there, tell us what's bugging you.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I kind of live on the outskirts of the city limits, but I've killed three big black spiders, and I'm just not sure of what kind of spiders they are, or they're getting closer to the house. One, I just happened to see coming across the road. Then one I saw behind a fence, behind a radiator we had on the fence. And then the third one was kind of close to the house, big black spider. And I was just wondering, what could we be doing to see these spiders so frequently? And is there anything we can do to prevent them? I don't know what type they are.
Are they closer to the size of a quarter or the size of a dime?
Oh, no, these are big ones.
Like, big ones?
Yeah. I used to call them wood spiders.
Exactly. That's exactly what they are. If you have big, dark-colored spiders, especially if they have stripes running down their back, that's going to be a wolf spider. They are absolutely harmless. You know, if you pick them up and start to play with them, they might bite. All spiders can bite, but they're just probably lost in your house. As things warm up, they become more active. They're out there looking for prey to eat. And if they're in your house, I can guarantee you, Jackie, they're lost. They don't want to be in there any more than you want to have them in there.
Well, they had made it inside the house. The last one I found near the entrance to the kitchen.
Right. I would just leave them alone unless they start to really be a pest or a nuisance. And then you can take just any kind of General Mill insecticide and just spray it around your bottom of the doors, and that would repel them as well.
All right. You can get in on this conversation right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Beverly Burden is our guest tonight, and the name of the program is What's Bugging You? And I believe we have Devin online from Shreveport right now. Devin, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and ask your question. What's bugging you?
Yes, I was wondering if a light dusting of diatomaceous earth, like in your, you know, you're under your sinks and stuff like that, would have the same effect on roaches, not the more of like the Asian roaches or even the American cockroach type thing, the larger roaches, as it does on like bees. I know it will remove a bee colony, and I wasn't sure if it had the same effect on them, if it would be a useful way to deal with roaches in the house.
Devin, I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think it would have any effect on roaches. Most of the time when we use diatomaceous earth, that is normally outside, and that's going to take care of things like slugs. Diatomaceous earth is basically little crystals that abrade as the snails cross over or the slugs cross over. What I would recommend for roach control, and it's completely harmless to you and to your pets, is boric acid. You can buy it anywhere, and you just put a light dusting around the edges of your cabinet or around the edges of your floor, and roaches will crawl through that boric acid powder, pick it up, and then, believe it or not, roaches will actually clean themselves like a cat does. And then when that boric acid gets into their stomach, it becomes a stomach poisoning, and it's very lethal to the cockroaches, but at the same time, safe for pets and humans.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. Somebody had told me that some boric acid or some pets react badly to boric acid, so that's not the case?
Well, there's always the chance that somebody might have a hypersensitivity to anything, anaphylactic type of response, but 99.9% of the time, boric acid is the way to go.
All right. And we have another caller online. I believe this is Barry again. Barry, what's your question?
No, this is not Barry. I have another question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
There was a product that was marketed as called a mosquito magnet, and you hook a bottle of propane to the tank and to the machine, and then you would put a odorant in there. I was wondering how successful they are.
I like the theory behind it, because one of the things that mosquitoes are attracted to is carbon dioxide, and that's one of the gases that were being released by some of these machines, and they would go by different names. But at the same time, I still, in order for protection, I would still try to use DEET. They've gotten huge advances and the chemistry, you know, it doesn't smell bad like it used to, and it's not as oily as it used to be. And the problem also with these things like mosquito magnets is they will flood the area. In theory, they would flood the area with so much CO2 that it would confuse the mosquitoes and they wouldn't be able to target into humans. But to date, I haven't really seen enough scientific data to back that up.
All right. You're listening to What's Bugging You with our guest, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology here at LSUS and our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. You can call in right now at 800-552-8502. with your questions. Just to remind you, we'd like you to get your questions in as quickly as possible, and then we will literally disconnect you from the phone, so listen for the answers on your radio. There's about an 8-second delay, so that's more than enough time for you to get over to your radio and maybe even hear yourself asking the question. And I believe now we have Barry online. Barry, what's your question? What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, Bill. I'm looking for help getting rid of those little fruit flies that come in, I guess, on the bananas and hatch. I built a fly trap that has gotten rid of most of them, but they still seem to be coming, so I guess I'm not killing them quite as quick as they're hatching. And so if you've got any ideas to get rid of those, I'd be grateful.
With fruit flies and other little small gnat type of organisms like that, one of the most key things to do is to control any type of moist environment that they may be laying their eggs in. You're right, it's very easy to trap out the adults, but most of the time when you do trap out the adults, they've already laid their eggs. This can be anywhere from a moist plant. I always let my plants get a little bit on the dry end before I water them again, because the immatures of flies have to have moisture in order to grow and then finally pupate into adult flies. And so a big problem that a lot of people have had that's stimulated the fly population growth is they had these little ornamental bamboo things that have to sit in water. Bad idea if you want to control flies. Most of the time when people do want to trap out these flies, they'll just take a piece of banana and put it over in a jar and then maybe put some cheesecloth or something over the jar and then just change out that cheesecloth, because they will overposit their eggs on that cheesecloth. It seems like we've had an explosion of fruit flies this year, and I've seen them more this year than I have any other year I've been here. I'm not sure what's going on with that.
Maybe it's like the cicadas, once every 17 years, there could be some circadian rhythm going on in their life that we just don't know about yet. You're listening to What's Bugging You. You can call us right now at 800-552-8502 to get your question in with Dr. Beverly Burden.
I have fire ants in a raised garden bed. It's a small raised garden bed. What would be safe to use to get rid of the ants that would leave my soil?
One of the things that I'm going to mention to you is that I can't really say the name of a product by name, but I can tell you the company that makes it, and I can tell you the active ingredient in it. The company that makes it is called Ortho, and the active ingredient is acephate. And you just sprinkle the tiniest amount, like a half a teaspoon, on top of the fire ant mound and make sure that it's not going to rain that day or rain the next day. And I have had wonderful success with acephate. And it's not that poisonous of a chemical. It's in a classification called the organophosphates, which is about the same thing as your malathion and your diazinon, but you use so little of it, it's not going to have a major impact of that raised flower bed ecosystem.
Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 to talk to Dr. Beverly Burden about what's bugging you tonight.
My name is Ray, and I'm in Alexandria, and I work in the pest control industry. And I'd like to see what the doctor says about the when brown recluse bites, or what is supposed to be a brown recluse bite, gets categorized at that, and it's not, because we have a lot of that. And thank you.
Well, Ray, one of the things, major problems, is people tend to have, phobias about spider bites. And when they get spider bites, they can become irritated. And it's like I was saying before, they'll get a secondary infection off of like a Staphylococcus aureus, something along that nature. And then they can treat it with antibiotics. But it may cause a large necrotic wound, very similar to a brown recluse bite, but it'll be misdiagnosed as such. And so my advice to any of the people that you work with is whenever they feel like they've gotten bitten by anything, whether it be a brown recluse or a mosquito, is don't try to get a secondary infection. Wash it with warm water and soap, and go ahead and just as a preventative apply an antibiotic cream.
Give us your call right now, 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502, to ask Dr. Beverly Burden what's bugging you. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a moment to take more of your phone calls here on Red River Radio. And we are back again. 800-552-8502 is the number for you to call to ask Dr. Beverly Burden about what's bugging you. We have another caller online. Go ahead, caller. What's your question tonight?
Question is there any home remedies or organic ways to control the flies or mosquitoes? I'll take either or. You can't say any product names, but what about home remedies or anything of the such?
With mosquitoes, unfortunately, the best thing you can do is, and this would be in a safe alternative, if you have like a little pond or a water fountain, maybe a little koi pond, there's some things that's called mosquito donuts or mosquito dunks, and you put it in the water, and they slowly release over time what we call a BT toxin. That stands for Bacillus thuringiensis, and it's basically a toxin that's produced naturally by bacteria, but they can take and concentrate it in this, and it'll kill the immatures. It'll kill the wigglers and the tumblers, and you kill the immatures, you don't have a problem with the adults then. The adults, very hard to control without conventional pesticides or using the repellent DEET. In other organic ways, there are some garlic remedies that a lot of people have used that have found a lot of success. Also, something that's called organic cinnamite, that the active ingredient is cinnamon, capsaicin, and hot peppers. Grounded up hot peppers can be used. There's something that's called neem oil. It comes from a neem tree that's native to the country of India, and it has a compound in it called azadirachtin. And there are certain cultures that think the neem oil can be used for other remedies, as some people even brush their teeth and have neem oil soap. So there are some really good alternatives out there, and I would suggest exploring their use. And there's always insecticidal soap. Mix up a little bit of soap in a spray bottle, spray it on your plants, and that's going to kill any soft-bodied insects like aphids or white flies that are on your plants. So just garlic, a little soap and water.
So garlic's not just for vampires. It does work on bugs, too.
Yeah, it does.
And it's a natural remedy.
It is
certainly,
a natural.
Certainly safe. All right, we have another caller online. What's bugging you tonight?
Okay, fleas.
Yes, ma'am.
We've tried everything, and I was wondering what you recommend.
What I recommend is to treat your animals and keep them treated, so that's not a complete problem. You also have to clean out their bedding. The immatures of fleas do not feed on blood like the adults do. They feed on any dry organic matter, even a little bit of fecal flakes, that animals may have in their bedding. If it's a really bad infestation, you need to vacuum daily. There are some flea powders that you can put down in the carpet and then vacuum up. And once you're finished vacuuming, take that vacuum bag, or if it's a bagless vacuum, dump it in a trash bag, seal it up, take it to the curb. But you have to stay on top of it. There are some old-fashioned remedies that some people have used to a very good effect, and that is if you apply rock salt to an area, that will actually desiccate the fleas, especially the immatures. But normally the flea powders, vacuum, make sure you keep your animals clean, and it may take a week to 2 weeks, but you will eventually get on top of it.
All right. We need your calls right now at 800-552-8502. Give us a call, 800-552-8502, to ask Dr. Beverly Burden what's bugging you. We have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, I was wondering if she had an answer for eradicating a leaf cutter ant colony in my yard. The exterminators have tried the normal ground soap with the pyrethrins and chemicals, and it doesn't faze them. They're large leaf cutters.
I've never had anybody ask me about leaf cutter ants before. They're going to be very, very active here in the spring, and then in the hot, hot summer, they'll go dormant. They'll cover up their little holes and go away. If they tried the pyrethrins, that would be one of the major things I would go with. But if the pyrethrins aren't working, have they used any malathion or diazinon on it? You know, that's a little bit more of a stronger insecticide that you don't have to have a commercial license to do. If it ends in ION, like malathion, it's good. If it ends in THRIN, then the active ingredient is a pyrethrin. And that's what I would personally try. And if that didn't work, I might get my shovel out.
800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. The program is What's Bugging You? And our guest tonight, Dr. Beverly Burden. She is an associate professor of biology here at LSUS and our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. And we have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, sir. Hi, Dan. I have a lot of spiders in and around our house, and they seem to infiltrate it into the actual house. And the problem is, I have a lot of pets and a child, and I don't want to have to use anything super harsh. What can I put around the house to sort of keep all the critters out? That's not too bad.
I have two answers for that. One is what we call mechanical control. They must be gaining entry into your house from some portal open area. And if you can see light around a door, then spiders can crawl through that thin of a space. And so I would make sure that I have all my doors sealed, make sure I have all my windows sealed, and then on the outside to where your pets may not be around, I would treat it with a pyrethrin. Pyrethrins, all you have to do is you go and you look at the bottle, you look at the active ingredients. By law, the company has to put the active ingredients on there. They don't have to put the inactive ingredients. And if you see a fancy chemical name like bifilthrin, anything that ends in the suffix THRIN, that's going to be relatively safe for your pets and even children. Just to let them drink it. I mean, that's the logical thing. But spray, let it dry, it'll work.
Give us a call right now, 800-552-8502, to ask Dr. Beverly Burden a question about what's bugging you. And we have our next caller online. What's bugging you?
Hi.
Hello.
I am being attacked by flies, regular old household flies.
Well, what do you mean by being attacked? Just overrun by them?
Yes. They're all over my front porch, and whenever I open the door, they all swarm into the house.
That's the problem that a lot of people are having right now because of the heavy moisture in the soil. If you have a lot of potted plants out there, make sure that the soil doesn't stay so moist, and this will run its course. It's just a nuisance. If it was mosquitoes or something that might be able to transmit a disease like fleas or ticks, then I would be a little bit more concerned. But you can get some of these aerosol sprays that might knock down some of the adult flies that's probably taking a harbor refuge in maybe some shrubbery around the front door. But there's also some screening that you can buy. But you got to come in out of your front door, and so you can't really prevent that. So just stay on top of it, and it should be better with time. I wish I had a better answer for you, but that's it.
All right. 800-552-8502, the number for you to call. The program is called What's Bugging You? Dr. Beverly Burden is our host, and we have another caller online. And what's bugging you tonight?
Earwigs and carpenter bees. I raise rabbits, and I use the droppings under to put in the flower beds. But lately, as I scoop it up, I'm finding a lot of earwigs. Is there something I can treat that soil with and not kill the earthworms that are so useful?
Well, why do you want to kill the earwigs? They're harmless.
That's not what's getting into my roses and attacking my rose blooms?
Yes, those are, is what, you're absolutely right. I thought you were just didn't want them in the soil. But earwigs, a lot of people think that earwigs will crawl into people's ears and eat their way through the brain and come out the other end. That's a myth. It doesn't happen. But what earwigs do like to do is they like to crawl into tight spaces, and they will crawl into the opening buds of the flowers, and just by crawling in there, and they will the flowers will open up and the petals will be malformed and damaged. What I would do is I would take some seven dust. It's pretty innocuous to us, and I would dust the top of the soil that you're seeing those earwigs with, and I think that would reduce the population to a level that you can live with. Now, as far as carpenter bees are concerned, a lot of people don't know the difference between a carpenter bee and a bumblebee. A bumblebee's rear end has both yellow and black on it, but a carpenter bee rear end will be solid black. What they're doing is that they're burrowing through the wood. They're actually using their mandibles, their jaws, to burrow through the wood, and they're creating little nurseries. They'll lay eggs all in this wood channel, and what I do is one is using mechanical control. I will take a little badminton racket and just knock them down and stomp them. I know that sounds viciously cruel, but if you don't want them damaging your wood, that's what you have to do. The other thing I do is I keep a little dowel stick about the same size as a carpenter bee hose, and I'll just kind of plug up that hose, snip it off, and entomb the little young ones in there.
Last time I heard the term earwigs was in a night gallery program. That's all the way back to the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Give us a call, 800-552-8502, and ask your question, what's bugging you, with Dr. Beverly Burden tonight. We have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello.
Hello. What's bugging you?
Yes, I have two questions. One is, why does the water in a plastic bag work to make flies go away? That's my first question. And my second question is, I have lizards that are, I call them geckos, but they're probably not. And since they've lived in my house, or not my house, but outside, we've had no roaches. Are they natural predators for roaches? And I'll hang up now and listen to the answer.
All right.
Well, the water in the bag, I'm a scientist, and it's never been scientifically proven that it actually works, but this is the theory. The theory is that the light glistening off of the water on a plastic bag disorientates the fly. Some people claim that it works. Some people say that they've tried it and it doesn't work. And so it's an unscientific thing, but there's a lot of things that work that we can't explain scientifically. So if it works for you, I'm happy for you. Now, as far as the gecko lizards are concerned, they are called Mediterranean geckos, and they used to be sold as pets, but just like many other things, they have now been released into the wild. But the wonderful thing about Mediterranean geckos here in the East Texas, Southern Arkansas, Louisiana area is that they are taking up a niche, a place in the ecosystem that no other lizard. So they're not out competing with any other species. They are wall dwellers or fence dwellers. They like to stay on vertical areas. And I would leave them alone, and they are very fierce predators of roaches and other types of insects. And so they're the good guys.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, back in my time in Florida, we wanted them around because mm-hmm. we knew that they were keeping down, especially the mosquito population, which, you know, we were in fairly swampy territory, so that was always horrendous. But they kept down a lot of other, them and skinks, or mm-hmm. they and skinks.
Yeah, we're not going to see many skinks in this area.
Yeah, no, skinks are quite a bit larger. And the nice thing about geckos, too, is every now and then you find one with an Aussie accent. So give us a call right now, 800-552-8502, to talk with Dr. Beverly Burden, our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio and an associate professor of biology here at LSUS. So we're going to take a quick break here and ask you to go to your phones right now at 800-552-8502 and let us know what's bugging you. And once again, we are back in the studios with Dr. Beverly Burden. And this is What's Bugging You. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director here at Red River Radio, and we're asking you to go to your phones at 800-552-8502. Go and make a call and let us know what's bugging you. Caller, we have a caller online. What's bugging you?
Yes, sir.
Yes, what's bugging you?
I've got a follow-up about the fleas.
Okay.
A few minutes ago. And my question is, black walnuts, I understand that that is a natural deterrent for fleas. What is the lady's professional opinion of that, please?
There are a lot of chemicals that are in the what I would call the husk of walnuts, the husk of pecans. And what a lot of people do is they'll take and they'll blend these up in a blender, or maybe just use a baseball bat and a tub and create a and what we would call an extract. And they do have anti-insecticidal property, but I also would warn you not to dump this into any natural waterway because it can also poison fish. A lot of people that are from South Texas know that it's illegal to chop up pecan hulls and throw them in the river. It will basically cause the fish to suffocate. They'll rise up to the top, and it's a fast way to fish, but it's an illegal way to fish. Mm-hmm. And so that's been an old standby as an organic insecticide for a long, long time, and sometimes we just forget about those natural things. Yep. Thanks for your question.
All right. You're listening to What's Bugging You. The number to call, 800-552-8502. We have another caller online. I believe this is Cynthia. Cynthia, what's your question?
Yes. I have some giant black ants that just appear in my house. I don't know where the bed is or where they're coming from. It's not a sugar ant. It's a giant ant. And I just wanted to know, is there any kind of remedy or advice about that?
The one large black ant that occurs from time to time here is a carpenter ant, and you do want to control carpenter ants because they don't eat wood like termites do, but they excavate wood. And carpenter ants are in the northern part of the United States, as termites are here in the southern part of the United States. And I would get somebody to identify that for you. If you want to bring it out to LSUS and drop it off in my office, leave your name and number. I can look at it and tell you whether it's a carpenter ant or not, but definitely you want to get that identified to make sure. If it is, you'll probably need professional control. But as for ants in general, diazinon is a good treatment to use. Chlorpyrifos is a good treatment to use, and you just have to look on those bottles and see if the active ingredients, if diazinon is there or chlorpyrifos is there, and those are very good ant repellers and insecticides to use.
All right. You're listening to What's Bugging You, and you can call in right now at 800-552-8502, and we have another caller online. Caller, what's your question? What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, I was curious. I have Terminix come to the house. And they come every 3 months, I believe. I don't let them spray the garage because there's the lizards and the skinks, which I have lots of them. Lots of skinks are everywhere. But I was afraid that what they spray to kill bugs and stuff would hurt them. Is that correct? Or does it matter?
Well, it depends on what they're spraying, actually. And without knowing exactly what they're spraying, this would be my concern. As we know, what do lizards and skinks eat? They eat insects. And if they're eating insects that have been compromised with an insecticide, then depending on which chemical it is, it could then in turn harm the reptiles that you have there or any of the amphibians. So that would be a major concern. There are many insecticides that work as nerve poisons, and I don't have time today to go into the details of it, but it poisons the nerves of insects the exactly same way it would poison our nerves. And so it would have potential problems for those up in the food chain.
All right. You can call in now. We have about 13 minutes left. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. And ask your question to Dr. Beverly Burden about what's bugging you. We have a caller online. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, this is James in Colfax.
Yes.
Well, I have an answer for the flea problem, and it's worked for me for about 35 years. If you get the people that have a flea problem to put a pie pan with some water in it, a couple of drops of any kind of a dishwashing liquid that is a surfactant, then put a gooseneck lamp over that pan, and at night, the fleas will jump up toward the light, fall into the water and drown. In the morning, they will look and see a pan full of dead adult fleas. And if you get rid of the adults, therefore you have no more eggs laid, and the flea problem's gone.
I would argue that that would work in situations of extremely heavy infestations, but you know, everything is dependent upon one factor or the other, and if that's worked for you in the past, it never hurts to try something new. Thank you, James.
My daughter was just born at the time that I heard of this, and I didn't want to use any pesticides in my house. So I tried this, and we rid the entire house of an infestation of fleas. And I've given this to several other people, and they come back and thank me very much because it's worked for them also.
A lot of times will also depend on the color. For example, it works for wasps, too. If you put a yellow bowl in the yard and some soapy water in there, it'll be full of wasps. So that type of attraction does have other examples that can be used.
All right. You're listening to What's Bugging You, and the number to call, 800-552-8502. And we have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you?
Yes, sir. My mother she's convinced that sulfur keeps chiggers away, and I was wondering if that actually works, because I'll be honest, I can't stand the smell of it when I go to her house.
Sulfur has been used as a natural insecticide for literally hundreds of years. It was first documented in China that they would use sulfur extracts to control some of the insects that were especially in their citrus orchards. And so, yes, there is some scientific base to that. And does sulfur smell bad? Yes, it does. But if it's working for your mom, it's worked for a lot of other people for hundreds of years. Yes, sir.
And you're listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can call in right now at 800-552-8502 and ask your question about our insect world. What's bugging you? And we have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you tonight? Is this Lee?
Yes.
Lee, what's bugging you?
The look, I raise tomatoes in little half tubs, you know, little half drums, and I had some grape tomatoes last year, and because it was so warm down here, I was able to kind of pull the tubs around, which works good, and keep them where they didn't freeze or get frostburned. And I had tomatoes right up until the 1st of February. And the vine produced well for the whole time, but whenever I cleaned it out to get ready to start again, it looked like there was a lot of, like, root knot nematodes all in the soil, and it was potting soil that I had. I was just curious if there was... I don't like to use chemicals, you know, unless you have to, but is there some way to try and combat that, or is it just because I kept them so long that's what's going to eventually happen?
Well, root knot nematodes are normally, they inhabit the root, and they cause a little knot to be formed on the roots, and normally it's not that, unless it's in, you know, and acres and acres, then it's not going to have that high of an economic impact. And apparently it wasn't affecting your tomato plant all that well, or else you would not have had production all the way up into February. But let me tell you, there are a lot of different types of nematodes out there. Next to arthropods, nematodes are the next largest group. There's a lot of predator nematodes out there. There's nematodes out there that eat nematodes. Nematodes exist everywhere in a habitat that you can possibly think. Nematodes are everywhere in anything, and most of them are not harmful. Some of them are beneficial. They have been used in biological control to actually combat root knot nematodes, but until you can find out whether they were root knot nematodes or not, I wouldn't worry about it.
You're listening to What's Bugging You, a program from Red River Radio with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology here at LSUS, and our resident entomologist. You can call in now. We have just a short time left, 800-552-8502. Give us a call. And we have Sarah, I believe, online. Sarah, what is bugging you?
Hi. We've been having periodic infestations of fruit flies over the past year, and we have one going on right now. But I'm pregnant, and I'm trying to avoid any kind of pesticides in the house, so we're looking for some kind of natural remedies to get rid of the fruit flies.
They have been really bad this year, and one thing that I always tell people about the control of flies, if you can control flies, if you can control moisture, the immatures of the flies are going to be living in some kind of damp organic matter, whether it's soil that might be enriched with nutrients or whether it's anything damp and organic. So make sure you dry out everything. And if you do, then over time, the adult fruit flies will eventually decrease in number. And so you could certainly try that. That would be my first combative tactic.
All right. Give us a call. We have about 5 minutes left. What's Bugging You is the name of the program. Dr. Beverly Burden is our host. And we have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you?
Well, we have a front porch light, and we have bees that that come up to the porch light, and they circle around it with their backs on the light, and then they eventually, I guess, they just die. And it, like, when we open the front door in the morning, it looks like this horrible bee graveyard out on our front porch, and we don't really know what to do to stop it from happening.
Well, that's unusual because bees normally are not active after dark, and so I would first question the fact whether they are actually bees or not. Assuming that they are bees, you can always turn off your porch light. That would work pretty good. But you just may, sometimes things are cyclic and seasonal. It'll probably go away with time. And I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but oftentimes people replace white lights with yellow lights, and insects aren't attracted to yellow lights as much as they are to white lights. And they used to sell those, but I haven't seen them on the market for a long time. And so I'm going to have to look into that.
That's interesting that they would be showing up that way. So there's no insect that looks like a bee in this area that might be showing up in the evening?
It would be the June bugs, but most people know what a June bug looks like, and it would be kind of hard to mistake a June bug for a bee. But they're about the same size as a bee, and I'm trying to think of other things that it might possibly be. Maybe some other type of beetles, but nothing in the bee family.
Yeah. We have time for maybe one or two more callers, and this is What's Bugging You. Give us a call, 800-552-8502. We have another caller online. Caller, what's bugging you?
Hi, this is George. I have these little bugs. They're called roly-poly bugs. They're kind of a gray bug. If you touch them, they roll up into a ball. Mm-hmm. And then what that we're finding is they're eating the roots out from under a whole lot of plants that we planted. And then it seems like no matter what we put on there, it just does not bother them.
The thing with roly-polies is they like things moist and they like things in the dark. And, of course, that's where the roots are also at, and so that could be a problem. There might be some systemic insecticides that you might try to use, and it'll say that on the bottle that the plant will actually take up, and it'll actually be in the root that could deter feeding or to knock down their population so they don't damage the roots so much. But roly-polies are going to feed on any kind of organic matter they can find. The fact that you have them in such high numbers would be the only explanation as to why they're actually causing noticeable damage, George. So, and they're very easy to call out. Every once in a while, just get you a spoon or a brush and brush them away.
All right. We have time for one more caller. Dexter is online. Dexter, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, first off, I wanted to say I've enjoyed listening to y'all, and so much of this is just singing in what my grandpa used to do. He was an orchard man, and he had about 100 acres of peaches. But he's part of my heritage, and he raised me up hunting with dogs, and so I've had those. And I have, because I'm going in and out of the field with the animals so often, I continue to have fleas, ticks, etc. And grandpa used to keep his dogs around the walnut trees and the pecan trees. But he also had shrubs that he planted around where he kept his hounds tied.
Okay, Dexter, we're running out of time, so we need to get to a question real quick.
The question is, what shrubs are there that you could plant around your kennels or your pens that would possibly be a deterrent for these the fleas?
Well, Dexter, you had me on that one. I really don't have an answer for you, but I do have some advice for you. If you're raising peaches, There is a brand new insect pest of peaches. It's called the brown marmorated stink bug. It's been found in Mississippi and all up through the Ohio Valley and Pennsylvania range. And so be on the lookout for these brown marmorated stink bugs. I think they're going to come into Louisiana next, and they're a big pest in orchards.
All right. You've been listening to What's Bugging You. Beverly, thanks for coming in tonight. We took a lot of phone calls. Hopefully the next time we do this, we can get some more of your calls. Thanks again for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime that I can help people with insect problems and just get the education out there, that's what it's all about.
All right. You've been listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio. Wally Derleth was our associate producer. I'm Bill Beckett, the program host and producer tonight. Dr. Beverly Burden is our resident entomologist and expert on the insect world. She is an associate professor of biology here at LSUS. This program is a production of Red River Radio, a community broadcasting service from LSUS.